Hey, everybody, this is Todd, the creative director of UCB Comedy. I am here in New York City in the UCB Comedy Studios. And this week I had Paul Briganti, or Paul Briganti. We're going to find out which I had in here. You'll know Paul from his long resume of online videos, and he's recently made the leap to television. And he'll be talking about Landline, Jest, College Humor, as well as Adam Ruins Everything and The Middle of the Night Show, which he is making with College Humor for MTV and True TV, respectively. Paul has some very interesting things to say about his career and the current state of digital comedy creation. So stick around. Hey, I'm here with my buddy Paul. And Paul, say your last name, because I've heard different people say it different ways, and I say it away.
Okay.
You say
I say Briganti, but can before you say how you say it, I think I say it wrong.
You say your own last name wrong?
Yeah. Because I think the official Italian way to say it is Briganti, and I say Briganti. So I think more people call me Briganti behind my back. I don't know about it.
Yeah, I think a lot of people do call you Briganti behind
your
back.
Do you say it?
No, I say Briganti.
Oh, okay, good. That's the right way to say it. That's my right way to say it, but I think overall it's the wrong way. So there's no wrong way to say it.
Great.
Unless you say something completely off.
Yeah. Unless you say Smith.
Yeah, then it couldn't be worse. Yeah. Couldn't be farther away.
Yeah.
And or just normal. I don't like that. Yeah.
So Paul,
whoops.
Why don't we start by like just maybe this is maybe something that we'll get at, but I will have already given a little intro saying like here's your resume.
Okay.
But like what are you up to these days right now?
These days it's kind of in a weird transition period for me. I was working at College Humor as a director for about two or three years, and I just like left the company full time. But I'm now working on two of their newer TV shows, just as like a freelancer now. But I'm still like very heavily into the company. The whole company is going like kind of through a transition. So I am working on two of their shows, as like a director, producer, person. One of them is called The Middle of the Night Show. It's on MTV. It'll be on MTV in the fall, two new shows. And one is called Adam Ruins Everything, and it will be on True TV in the fall. I think they premiere the same week, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
You're going to have competing television shows.
I know. I want to crush me. I just want to self-sabotage myself. That's why I'm doing this. So this is my first like step doing TV work, and it's like very consistently, very soon.
Yeah.
But it's been awesome, and it's been really busy and great.
Now, a lot of people want to be working in TV, and I think that's not luck that you got two TV shows.
You.
I think it's talent, because you're a very
talented
guy.
Thank you.
Let's talk about that a little bit. I guess my first question is, I am scared about making the eventual leap from like where I am to television or film or whatever.
Yeah.
And I guess like what are some of the things that you've overcome, and has it been easier because you're working with maybe a team?
Yeah, I will say that it's been very helpful to go, because like pretty much all my old bosses are like EPs on these shows, and they've been very supportive of me, like, you know, kind of pushing and working really hard. So I definitely feel that support in these. So I do feel like is there a thing where you go in like cold water or something, but you have like warm water around you, you know, so you transition to the
pissing
cold?
In the water. You're pissing.
I just have this image of like in my head of a person going into water and they're surrounded with like a giant bucket that's like warm water, but I don't think that's a thing. I think that's something I made up, but it's connected to a thing. It's basically just like going in a very uncomfortable, sort of dangerous world, but surrounded by support and comfort that one usually doesn't have. And I thank you for saying that I was talented, but I do think that if I was just kind of thrown into situations without top-down support, you don't do as well and you don't believe in yourself. So I've been really lucky where it's been like this positive constant cycle where like I've gotten support from people who are, you know, more important than me. And then I've done really well with it. And then that product has gotten me more support, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it is a very different world. And I think the main world, I think it's closer to commercials and branded stuff, to where you just have to, like, explain yourself so much more. Like, if you want to do something, like, even just something small, it's just like, we want to get a shot outside of the bar that we're shooting in. And then, like, you have to tell five people that, and you have to say why, because it's like 10 minutes more. And so it's not harder. It's just more like, okay, I got to tell all these people that I'm doing this thing. Whereas, like, if you're doing, like, a web video, you just, like, do it and not say anything.
Yeah.
And then you got it.
Yeah.
Maybe tell one person.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just more explaining yourself, more. It's an interesting balance, because, like, College Humor, I feel like when I was working there, with me in particular, they really reward pushing for stuff and, like, being creative and, like, standing up for creative in these situations. And then in the world that the small experience I've had in the TV world so far, it's a balance of that, whereas, like, you don't really want to push too much. You will really want to pick your, like, creative battles.
Yeah.
So that's sort of what I'm learning now, and, like, learning how to, like, do things creatively and not and efficiently, much more than just creatively.
Because I imagine if you have to clear this through five people,
yeah,
one, that's a drain. That's just,
yeah,
it stifles creativity going through five people.
Yeah, I mean, because every decision you make, you have to be like, well, is this worth X and X and X and X's reaction to it?
Yeah.
And a lot of times it makes you think more efficiently and, like, do things better and smarter.
Yeah.
But then sometimes it can kill just an easy thing that would have been simple to do that you would have been happy to have in the edit, you know?
Yeah.
But there is the reality of it. They're doing, like, 12 of these half-hour things, and, like, that's so much stuff. So, like, so there's, like, people whose job it is to just be like, this needs to get done.
Yeah.
Just do it. Finish. It needs to be done. And, like, there's maybe half the people whose job it is just make sure the whole thing gets done, because they have to.
Yeah.
Because they get in trouble if it's not done.
Yeah.
Because that's the worst thing in the world, if it's not finished. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, there wouldn't be a TV show.
Yeah, it'd be nothing.
Yeah.
So there's definitely a learning curve, especially for me, because I've never done anything in TV. Like, I've really wanted to do stuff in TV,
mm-hmm.
and now it's just like, I feel like the world was just like, okay, asshole, like, you want to do TV stuff? Here you go. And then it's just like a ton of it. And it's been, like, awesome and, like, very fast at the same time.
Tonally, these shows are pretty different too, right?
Yeah, they're so different, which is the part of the thing that makes it easier for me, just like just on a mental energy level and creatively. It's kind of gotten to a place where one of the shows is, like, such a break and, like, release and just stress relief from the other show, you know? Because, like,
do they go back and forth, or is it one is?
No, they go back and forth. Yeah, because they both have their challenges, mm-hmm. and but they're both completely opposite challenges. Like, the middle of the night show is more on the street and more like New York, run and gun, fast, and not really scripted as much. Like, there's, like, really good bits, and we get, like, a page for, like, all the beats and all the bits and stuff. But, like, it's more about, hey, that thing happened is funny and weird. Let's, like, follow that and run with that and, like, make it the joke of the thing. Like, we did this one thing, this bit the other night, and it was like Murph, this guy Brian Murphy, who's, like, the host of it. He had to interview people about this, like, play this little game with them, and we did it at, like, 3:30 in the morning at St. Mark's Place, which is the worst time and place to find anyone who wants to. Who you want to talk to, just do anything with, anything. It's a bad scene.
Yeah.
So he, like,
because they're drunk.
They're drunk and they're just, like, so looking for trouble.
Yeah.
They really are. And we have giant camera ring lights. We are, like, the bullseye in their, like, drunk trouble brain.
Mm-hmm.
So we got, like, mooned on camera. Like, some guy talked, like, bomb, or not, you know, like, Baba Booey bombed us or something, you know, and it's like, and the whole bit is now that's the joke, where Murph is just trying to like make this simple bit work and just people keep destroying it.
Yeah.
And we just kind of found it and had fun with it. So that's like the run and gun nature of it. And then Adam Ruins Everything is like nothing can go wrong. It's like it's precise and perfect, and art direction is really important, and the camera moves are really important.
A lot of oneers in there too?
Yeah, a lot of oneers. Yeah, that's like the big thing, and the choreography is really important. So that satisfies my like film buff P.T. Anderson fan of my brain, who's just like, oh, this is awesome. I get to do this like really cool stuff, but it also has its own challenges and stresses. And so, whoops, I'm sorry. I hit the microphone.
You said you were fidgety.
Yeah, I'm a fidgety person.
That's your P.T. Anderson. Cool.
That's where it shows.
Yeah.
So when you're doing Adam Ruins Everything and you're like, all right, I've made a million storyboards and shot lists and it was a lot of fun, but like, I think I'm ready to just like go on the street and say, fuck it.
Yeah.
And like, see where the weird night takes me. So I've been really lucky that I'm not doing two shows that are tonally similar.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Let me ask you, I'm curious like how much, I like coming into a project, sometimes I don't know where to, like, you're talking a little bit about like the support system you have and like where you feel comfortable saying this
so
is what
important.
I want and this
so
is what
important.
I don't want.
Yeah.
I wonder, like, you mentioned you have certain lights, certain cameras, certain things. Like, how much do you say, like, this is what I want for this thing?
Yeah.
And how much does like a producer come and say, this is the camera package you're using, this is the crew you're using?
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's a really good question. I think that's why I like really asked and tried to be a producer on these shows, and I ultimately got to be.
Mm-hmm.
That was a big thing. So I have learned in the TV world, and I sort of kind of knew this before, is that directors don't have as much power, or they're not as welcome in those conversations.
In TV.
Yeah. But like producers definitely are. And so I've been lucky enough to be a part of a lot of those conversations. But I, you know, it's not, the thing is, it's not like, this is the camera we're using. It's like, here are three options. I like this option a lot. The DP really likes this option a lot. It's a little more money, but I found a way to get it cheaper. Or like I worked with a line producer. He said we can get it cheaper. So like really pitching things and trying to make it.
So being a solution.
Yeah. And showing that it is the right option and saying why, you know, because, you know, we're the Adam Ruins Everything, like, is everyone knows that show is supposed to be visual. Like, it's based on precedent, I guess, and that's what we all want. It's what the network wants. But with the MTV show, it's like a lot of it is like Man on the Street. So it is a little hard to justify some cooler things sometimes, because it's not the tone of the show. I admit, I understand that, but yeah, it's definitely like you have to just have your options. You have to say what you like, and then just hope that the people in charge agree with you. And a lot of times they do. But I do think that is what I learned, that like being a producer, if I was just directing the episodes and I said that stuff, I think it would be taken with a little less, you know, seriousness, just because that's the world.
Yeah.
It's kind of a producer's world, I think, or like a creator's world.
Do you think there's, you have this dual, but you have a lot of other skill sets within filmmaking as well. Like I think I'm right in saying that, like, I feel like you have the ability to, like, if I gave you a few resources, you could go out and deliver something if you needed to.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, definitely. I think like I can shoot and stuff and edit. I love editing. Editing's like why I started doing this and why I think I could do it in the beginning, because if you have like a skill, then that makes it a lot easier for you to direct, because you're the one doing it and editing it. It's kind of like your way in. I mean, you do have a lot of skill sets too, you know. I think you kind of have to, right?
I feel like this is where this can be a conversation too, so you can ask me anything you want as well.
If
there's something that you're like,
yeah, yeah.
But
what are you an editor director or a DP's direct DP director? Like, what did you start doing, or both?
I did all three.
Yeah.
Well, I was like, cool. DP, editor, director. That was when I first moved into freelance. I was doing all three.
You got it.
But I think it was really important for me to drop the DP editor.
Yeah.
Because I was getting hired to DP edit and not direct.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm not those things anymore. So while I can go out and do them, and I find them really helpful to my directing.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's interesting with that stuff because, like, with your commercials and your videos and everything and your work, like, probably the best person to edit it, I would imagine, is you. But, like, you don't want to, you can't.
Yeah.
You know, it's a weird thing where, like, I feel like the more work you get, they're like, people like to carve out their little worlds and stuff. You know, it's like, you're a director, you're an editor, and, like, for some reason, you just have to not say that you are.
Yeah.
You do all those things. But I agree with you that, like, it can be an advantage and sort of a disadvantage. Like, you know, quite honestly, like, after these shows are done, I'm not going to have a job. And, like, I've never not – well, I have not had a job. Like, obviously, when I was, like, you know, young person, I didn't have a job. But, like, I've never not had, like, sort of a consistent thing since, like, the age of, like, 21. So, like, a skill that I have is, like, editing. But, like, I feel like I'm going to have to, like, turn down some editing jobs just, like, in the beginning just to stay a little focused, you know?
Yeah.
Even though I love doing it, and I think it's a great way to work, a great thing to do. But, yeah.
Well, let's talk about what were you – was Landline when you were 21?
Yeah. That was my first, like, job, I guess, doing videos.
And what was Landline?
Oh, Landline is a
oh, it still exists.
According to, like, the paperwork and stuff, it's still a company. It was a production company started by myself and these two guys I met, Jared Newmark and Saj Pothiwala, name drop, just in case. It was like a small production company that we met through UCB. We were writing sketch writers and stuff, and we just made, like, videos for YouTube, and then just kept doing it all the time for no one told us to do it except ourselves. And then eventually I was not the business savvy person, contrary to what you may think, but Jared was a very good, he had the, like, a focus and vision. He was like, we can turn this into a business, and sort of hustled in that way.
Mm-hmm.
And so we became, like, this business for a couple years that, like, made videos. Our main source of income was making, like, sketches for companies, you know, like, a couple of them aren't around anymore. Mm-hmm. this company called Babblegum. I think you did videos for
them. Yeah, I made Babblegum. Yeah.
I mean, every couple years, like, there's a new person in town.
Yeah.
Who's just like, hey, I've got a lot of money.
Yeah.
And I want to make a bunch of sketches. And then you do it, and it's great.
And then you hopefully get to make a few. And you're like, hope your career lasts longer than the startup.
Oh, of course, yeah. And then we did them for AOL, and then we did them for MSN and, like, Yahoo, and eventually just kind of snowballed where these people were like, hey, where'd you get those videos made? And then they were referred to us and stuff. So we made like a bunch of stuff, and we had, like,
how many videos do you guys think you made?
Well, on the YouTube page, there's maybe a couple hundred or something. And then not on the YouTube page, it's probably like 100, 150, something like that. But we made a ton of stuff, and we had, it was, looking back on it, it was, like, hilarious. We had, like, this big office and, like, Dumbo. You went to there, right?
Yeah, I was at the opening party.
Yeah, we had an opening.
Insane.
We had a party. I mean, it's so funny because, like, right after that, we, like, left. We went to work for Jest and College Humor. But, like, yeah, we were, like,
it was, like, a three-year lease, though, wasn't it?
I think it was 2 years. No, I don't know. Yeah, it was 10 years.
We're still paying. Yeah.
It goes up $5,000 every year.
I remember at that party, and I think I've mentioned this to you before, but, like, being at that party with you guys and just seeing all these young people overlooking New York skyline, and there was, like, a model on a Razor scooter just like circling the space.
Yeah.
And we're drinking
so
like shitty
funny.
Beer, but
yeah,
like.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was like keg beer. Yeah, yeah.
It was like this mix of like.
Yeah.
Oh, God, what world are all of the people I know and entering?
That's right? Really funny. Yeah. Yeah. It's like the flea market version of The Social Network, you know? It's like the used. But what's funny is like the model on the Razor scooter like sounds like that's someone we hired, but like we didn't hire that
just
person.
Somebody to do
just
it.
Having a good time.
It was organic.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like that's something that like people would hire a model to do, you know, at a party. They'd be like, just go on the Razor scooter, it'll be cool. And people will talk about it. But no, that was real. That was real. It was and like we got like an architect like design it and stuff, and we were like really excited about it. And I think like as that was happening, I was younger than these other guys. Like they were how old I am now. I'm 28 now. Mm-hmm. And at the time I was like 23, 22. And, you know, I had started doing this stuff because I wanted to be like a TV director and I wanted to make movies and stuff. And I found myself growing in this model on a Razor scooter world. And the like, you know, like, just we didn't really do any sketches anymore. We didn't do any like stuff that I thought was the most fun. It was only just branded stuff, you know? Like
you're doing like kids reenact.
Yeah,
stuff.
We were doing like these videos where like little kids reenact movies and stuff and events and like it was just kind of that was kind of plug and play and then it just turned into this thing where we were like, "Oh, we got to like make this thing now. What do we can think of?" And it was never for like us. It was more it started just us, and then it was like half for us, half for them, and then it just became just them because no one was keeping tabs on it. And then I was just getting a little tired of it, you know, just a little fatigued. And I think the other guys were too, you know. But we had just like got this really awesome office, and like my friend Megan like designed it and everything, and it was like really nice and it was beautiful, but like I just felt like I wasn't doing what I wanted to do.
It's like I've been in this situation,
yeah,
and I think everybody kind of gets there, like when you get good at something, people want you to do it again for them,
yeah,
and then you start to lose like exactly what you said, like I started doing branded content,
yeah,
and I got good at branded content. I did branded content to fund my projects.
Right.
And slowly it just arose. You have to make a choice at some point.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Do I like this money?
Yeah.
Do I like this business? And I'm sure you're good at it better than you say you are, but like, and you can make a choice of like, do I continue to go down that path?
Right.
Or do I do what I originally came here to do?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think what I was really lucky about was that I was so young and I was so aware that I was young. And I was like, you know, I can just not do this anymore. And, I'll have a couple years to, like, figure it out. Whereas if that happened now, I don't think I would do that, maybe. I would be, like, more scared to do it, you know? So that was why I think I was able to be excited about doing something else a little bit more than the other guys. Like, they were excited to move on, too, but, like, they definitely thought about it a lot more than I was thinking about it. I was just like, cool, we get to make cool stuff forever. Let's do it. And then they were like, well, we own a company and it's like doing well, you know, like let's think about this. And yeah, but Landline was great. It was like, it was this really just awesome thing that like, we got to do, and people, I met so many people through that. Like this MTV show, Middle of the Night Show, one of the EPs on it is Charlie Todd, and like I wouldn't have met him at all if I didn't do Landline and like UCB stuff. So like we have this like great shorthand and like respect and relationship and stuff, and I think it's for that. And so many people even now in LA like that were in Landline videos that I know and worked on Landline stuff and know me from that. It's really, really, it was like a crazy experience. It's a cool experience.
That turned into Jest, right? Because you and Saj and Jared all went over to Jest.
Yeah.
Which is College Humor.
Yeah.
Maybe describe what Jest was.
So when we were working on, when we were working on the on Landline, it was like kind of getting to this like really fun party, you know, advertising sort of world. Sam Reich called us, and Sam Reich is the head. Right now, he's like the president of everything at this company called Big Breakfast, which is College Humor's production, like TV production, long form production thing. He called us and he was like, hey, College Humor is starting this new website. It's called jest.com. It's supposed to be more of an older demographic than College Humor. The strategy was like a lot of their advertisers were like, didn't want to be associated with college stuff anymore, cause like especially like alcohol and stuff.
Yeah.
So you're like, we need a website that has more like adult following, you know, adult.
Not adult film, but like more yeah. mature.
Yeah. Adult meaning like 22 to 29 and like not 12 to 22.
Yeah.
And Sam kind of just like, he just like took all three of us, you know, and he was just, it was at a time when I was like really looking to do something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So us and this guy, Jeff Rubin, who's like one of the College Humor guys, and now he works at YouTube, who's great. We ran this website for a year and like all the original content and stuff. And it was more like political and like really, really topical, like way too topical. Like we just would like watch the presidential debates and then like make a video that night and then put it up the next morning. And sometimes they were good and sometimes like people watched them. But ultimately like the reality of it is it's like really hard to start a destination website, like a new website, especially because people don't, it's not really the layout of the internet anymore.
It's social media.
Yeah, it's like social media and all that stuff. And if you want to start a new website, I think you have to have like maybe 5 years worth of investment money in it. And I don't think that they were willing to do that because it didn't like, because a year is a really short amount of time. Like, I don't think people think about this, but like Funny or Die has been around for like over 10 years or something.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's crazy. Like you just, it kind of racks up and you kind of just get the credibility just by sticking around. So after a year they were like, this isn't really working financially. We want to stop doing this.
So then as Jess was coming to an end, they moved you over to director for College Humor, right?
Yeah. They moved me over, to do like sketches and stuff like that.
So you're College Humor now.
Yeah. Well, not now.
Not now.
That was then.
You're a Big Breakfast directing freelance.
I'm a hired freelance director producer.
Yes.
For Big Breakfast. But I think there's the stuff at College Humor we could talk about a little bit too.
Yeah.
So I think not until I started working at College Humor was when I like really understood what it means to like direct. And I still feel like I have a lot to learn, but like, What I'm doing now, I feel like I really owe to that.
Mm-hmm.
So like they really like supported the director there. They really do, and they like believe that that's a really important part of it, and that's why I was able to do a lot of cool things. You know, they just like respond really well to excitement if you're excited about something.
Yeah.
And you can make it good. So I learned a lot of stuff. Like I went to film school for like 2 years. And I like did Landline, I did Jest, but like I really feel like most of my important education came from College Humor, like being on those sets, because you do like a new short film a week, you know? So like, and I mean, you know how to deal with that's like. Like you just have to like think of a completely different look and style for something based on the script and based on who's in it and stuff like that. So like that was really, really valuable in now. So
yeah.
So I directed the first sketch of Adam Ruins Everything, and that was like did so well and like kind of like just came out of Adam's personality, which is like the funniest personality in the world, who's just like that. He's like that person but like scaled way down, you know? Like
yeah.
he's just he jokingly was that character for a long time, and then he just turned it into a script, and then we just did it, and it did really well, and it continues to do really well. But yeah, that was a really lucky one. And then the Middle of the Night Show was directed by Josh Rubin a couple years ago with Dan Gurwitch.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, it was called something else, and then as a company, Kyle Jumer pitched it to MTV and sort of developed it with them. And I directed the sizzle reel for that to like pitch it.
Yeah.
And then I directed the pilot for that once it sold, and now I'm working on the series.
Nice.
Yeah. So it's been, there's been so many times for everyone involved in this project where like a project or thing falls through after doing so many rounds of these things. But like, luckily it's been going well. Like, and they all seem really excited about it, and it's like been really fun to do.
One thing you mentioned, maybe I'll just reiterate what you said, because I think it's true. I think about like how a previous generation of filmmakers would come from like, they'd maybe make one short and then they'd get to make a feature.
Yeah.
Or like they'd work as something on a television show and then they'd maybe get the chance to direct something.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's not the way that I see the careers of my friends working now.
No, yeah, totally.
You make like 100, 200 videos, online videos, and then maybe you get a chance to like make that leap.
Yeah, yeah, totally. And I think my philosophy is always like if you just keep doing it as much as you can, you'll get better at it. And then it's not like I didn't discover a new philosophy or anything. A lot of people have this one, but like you'll get better at it and more people see it as you just keep doing it. It'll sort of like snowball and sort of build on itself. But yeah, that is really funny that like it doesn't matter anymore about like doing the one thing. And then I don't know if it's a good thing or not. I don't know. It's just a cool thing. It's just like different now.
Yeah. I still think you need to do, it might be more challenging now because it's like you have to do 100 really good things rather than like one really good thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that means you can also fuck up 100 things that you just don't tell people.
That is awesome. Yeah. That is like a really awesome thing. Like I've fucked up so many times. And like, luckily, they were not important things.
Yeah,
and they could have been not important. They could have been important things, you know.
I'm gonna ask you for a piece of advice.
Okay,
it'll be for me specifically, but I think it's for everybody. Sometimes I get the opportunity to freelance for other places.
Yeah,
any number of like, I've gotten to freelance for some really awesome spots. And exactly what you're talking about, that opportunity to fuck up, like I try not to fuck up. And I think this is the case with, and sometimes it's for brands and sometimes it's for just comedy sites. And I find that like I'm walking to somebody else's world.
Totally. Yeah.
When I'm working in UCB comedy, because I know everybody, I feel super comfortable. I take chances, take risks, and I like push when I'm walking to somebody else's world. Do you have any advice or have you learned anything about walking into somebody else's
world
and trying to like bring what you might bring with a group of friends.
Yeah, you know, I recently did a couple shoots for The Late Late Show, the new James Corden show, and like that was exactly that experience. It was just like walking into this world where everything's buzzing and moving and people just don't know who you are. You know, they've seen each other for months and stuff, and then you're kind of walking into it. And what I've found in that experience was like there was this quote that from James Cameron, which I really love this quote. I had my friend paint it. It's just like he says something like everyone's job is to like doubt you, so like why doubt yourself, like as a director. So like what I try to do is I just like say exactly what I want, like we need to do this, and like push really hard, like kind of from the top, not in like a mean way, like just be nice about it. Like, hey, this is what you hired me to do. You made me make this thing good. I want to make it good. And then if you're in a new world for the first time, push that thing and say everything you want and then see how they react to it. And if they're just like no, then you're just like, all right, that's cool. You know, like just be like, okay, I understand. Great. And so I think in doing that, you establish yourself as someone who's confident, someone who's excited to do this. But if they say no, you say, okay, then you're kind of like acknowledging that, like, it's not my world, it's your world, you're paying me. So I think it's this balance, and that's sort of what I'm turning into and like shaping up to be. Like I wanted to do like a lot of like, you know, elaborate stuff, and they were like, hey, we have like an hour to shoot this.
Yeah.
Like maybe not get a Steadicam for this thing, you know?
Yeah.
And I was like, sure. And, you know, and then we just did it, and it came out fine. They were happy with it, and you know, and so that's kind of what my new, like, going into a new world experience has been. Maybe it'll be updated as I go into a bunch of new worlds.
Yeah.
How is your experience? Like, what is your type of thing?
I find it similarly in that, like, I want to be a good soldier sometimes, and that's a shitty attitude for a director to have, I think, and I want to train myself out of that. And I want to come in and say, like, I work well with others, but I also have a point of view, and I think it should be done a certain way.
Yeah.
I think it's always, like, it's tough. I love to be part of the edit when I can't be part of the edit.
Yeah, of course.
That's heartbreaking.
Yeah.
And then I think pre-pro, too, is, like, hard for me.
Yeah.
And I don't like being – I mean, it sounds like I'm super finicky, but, like, I'm not. I love working with new DPs, but also, like, it's hard. There's always a learning curve.
Yeah, of course. Like, when we're hiring someone, like, for one of these shows, like, and I don't know them, I'm very nervous about working with them.
Yeah.
And then a lot of people that have been working on this show, these shows have, like, really been great and surprised me. And I'm like, oh, this is amazing. Now I have, like, a new favorite person to work with.
Yeah.
But there are... it's your job to question everything creatively, you know, like, because you don't know why people are making decisions, and a lot of times they're doing it because it's the easy one.
Yeah.
And your job is to be like, I know this is easy, but it might be worth us trying a little harder, you know?
Yeah.
There was this experience that Landline directed, this like web commercial years ago, and it was one of our first like bigger commercial jobs, and I had like a mindset that was just like, be really nice, like be really helpful, like you're here to work for them, they're the client, and like we were so nice, and like they would give suggestions, we were like, it's a great idea, awesome, and we would do it. And then we got feedback through the production company that the client was like, yeah, they were too nice, like they were too they didn't like stand up to us or like push us or anything, or like, you know, they just kind of like gave into everything we wanted. And I was so mad when I heard that, because I was just like, what the fuck? Like, why? I thought we're supposed to do a good job and be nice and like people like us. But like, as a director, like it kind of is your job to be like, to push people like in the nicest way and the most respectful way. That's what I've learned. It's just like the way of doing it should be. She'd be like, okay, I know you want this thing, but like, I think it'd be great if we had this thing, and it's a little more expensive, you know, and to just be able to do that and like push back on stuff, and when they give you notes on set, really think about it and just stand up for the piece here and there, and not just be like it's such a weird kind of frustrating balance, and especially in the commercial world, like,
because
they want a director to tell them what your experience is, like, you know, you've been doing this for years, they don't know, so they want you to be like, no, I've done this before, I know, but then they also want you to be like, yeah, I think everything you're saying is right, you know?
Yeah.
So it's this weird contradictory experience,
and,
I think.
And every person's different. I think the last time we talked, I just got finishing like 4 days of branded content shoot.
It
was awful. I won't say what I was working on.
Okay.
And
we'll keep going with the story, but like, I like your persona that you've been becoming in this world,
which is because
you're kind of this like honest, like, I don't know why, but Andrew Dice Clay popped into my head. You're just like this honest Dennis Leary type person with branded content, you know, like you do it and you do a great job at it, but like, you're like, yeah, this is wrong. Like, this is what's wrong with the world with Brandon content, you know? And like, I think people respect that. And I think that's why they like you and they want you to do their stuff. Cause you're being honest about it.
Well, I think that repeatedly I just see like people ask us to come in and do our thing. They say like, hey, you did it so well.
Yeah.
Paul, you did it well. Todd, you did it well. Anybody else, you did it really well.
Yeah.
Can you come and do it? And then they're like, yeah, we can do it for you. Yeah. And then they're like, okay, we don't let you do anything that you actually do.
So what do you do in this situation? Like, are you just like, hey guys, this is fun. This looks cool, but we're not interested. And do you walk? Like,
I can't walk for Upper Citizens.
A company.
I can walk for myself. I can say I don't think I should direct this one.
Right.
You know. But sometimes my reel gets passed around or my resume gets passed around. They're like, no, we want him.
Right. We know this is
So it's like, okay, I'll do it. But it's challenging.
Yeah.
And I think that I've learned a lot. And I think exactly what you're talking about is true. It's like, I want to make stuff, whether it's branded content or otherwise, that people want to watch.
Yeah.
And I think that brands could take a lesson from that. And people don't pass around commercials on their Facebook wall. They pass around stuff that they're truly interested in. And I want to do that for them.
Yeah, like the Old Spice guy wasn't a thing until the Old Spice guy.
Yep.
And someone had to be like, yeah, let's do this weird, silly thing. And now everyone's just like, let's do the Old Spice guy. Or maybe not even anymore. That's kind of old. I don't think people do that stuff as much anymore.
Yeah.
But you gotta be the first Old Spice guy sometimes.
And also you gotta be like, man, I'm trying to think of what I think you, it's funny that you say I'm so blunt about it. I don't think I'm so blunt about it because what I really, in my brain, I'm just saying I want you to succeed with what you're paying me to do.
Yeah. You're ultimately getting the last laugh client in this situation. You're getting what you want.
Yeah.
So it's my job to tell you what I think.
Yes. And I've made, I don't know, 700 videos at this point.
My God. That's insane.
So I think I have a little bit of understanding of what.
Yeah, a tiny bit.
And I've, of course, made videos that have gotten under 100 views.
Yeah.
And then over some that have gotten millions and millions of views. So I hope that
you've done it all. You kind of can see the 100 views thing happening as it's heading to 100 view town.
Yes.
Just hey guys, I think we should turn around.
Yeah. let me go to my list here.
Yeah, sure.
Here's a good, I got two bigger questions for you.
Okay.
It might take us down a longer path. We're at 45, but we got some stuff we can edit out.
Cool.
All right. This is more whose career?
Mm-hmm.
I think I asked you this already.
Okay.
But not on a podcast.
So it didn't count.
It didn't count.
Didn't matter.
It doesn't count unless it's recorded.
Okay.
Whose career would you Freaky Friday if you could Freaky Friday?
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean that they end up with your career necessarily.
Oh,
you're not
God.
Like. Not that they would be punished, but you might say if it's Spielberg, don't worry about them.
Yeah. Selfishly Freaky Friday.
Yeah.
Okay. I think that I would do it with Steven Soderbergh.
Yeah.
Because he's just I love him so much. His movies aren't my favorite movies ever. My favorite movie isn't one of his movies. But just his career is my favorite career. And I think his attitude is the perfect attitude for a filmmaker. You know, he's kind of like that mentality of hey, this is what's wrong with the industry. And he is very open about it and frustrated with it, but he loves it so much. And he's not a dickhead, you know, he's a nice, cool dude. And he is just so obsessed with all the movies he makes, and he makes so many different things. And he's such a badass, but he's not a lunatic, you know?
Yeah.
Sometimes when I watch Quentin Tarantino interviews, I'm just like, is that how you need to be to be a successful filmmaker? Do you have to be an asshole all the time?
Mm-hmm.
And then I watch Steven Soderbergh, and I'm just like, oh no, he's brilliant too. And he's just calm and collected. And
it looks like you could go to a barbecue with him.
Totally, yeah.
I would never want to be at a Quentin Tarantino barbecue.
No, absolutely not. Like it's.
I mean, if Quentin's listening, we'll both come to your barbecue.
please. But Soderbergh is the perfect balance of genius, creativity, and just cool dude.
I think he says like one for me, one for them.
Yeah, yeah, and he does that. Yeah,
even his one for them is still Ocean's 11.
It's just so good,
fun movie.
Yeah, it's such a good movie.
Yeah,
it crosses that barrier, you know, of like it's like a good artist movie and a good mainstream movie, which is what everyone wants. You know, it's like the Lego movie or something.
Yeah,
but yeah, and also he kind of I feel like he approaches movies the way I approach like sketches, where like so we did this one video that was like really crazy aspect ratio. It was like really thin, and we actually had to change it because my boss didn't. He was like, "This is too weird," which I think he has a very good point. But I kind of approach videos where I'm like, "Okay, like this person's like in a bathroom or something. And it's sort of like this weird thing. Like let's really follow and commit to what." I think this is the tone of this is. And like, I think Soderbergh does that with movies, just like really goes hard on like the style of it and commits really hard. Like the movie Traffic, is that it? Like half the scenes are in this like weird blue color correct. And the other half are in this like crazy saturated and warm color correct.
Yeah.
And you could tell so many people were just like, "Hey, do you really think this is like a good idea to do this?" And he's probably just like, "Yeah, I want to do it. I think it's a good idea. It'll look cool. It'll look different, you know?"
Yeah.
And like, maybe it's like hard to watch sometimes or like kind of weird, but like, who cares? It's like, it's just a cool, different thing and you remember it.
Yeah.
So it seems like he doesn't take his work too seriously, but he also is in love with it and takes it extremely seriously, you know?
It's like a weird combination of extremely precious, but not precious.
Yeah. Just like, fuck it. We'll make this. You know, we'll shoot in this weird aspect, like this weird art direct. Like, I want to try something like that. Like, that'll be fun. You know, that'll be different. And making sure, though, I think the most important thing is making sure that the content, like, you're not fucking over the script or the story or, like, just.
Although the Limey.
What?
Do you ever see the Limey?
No.
Soderbergh?
No.
Oh, man, he made it. You got to watch the Limey.
Okay.
The screenwriter who's worked with since then but hates what he did with Limey.
Oh, okay.
Soderbergh didn't like it, and so he basically re-edited the whole thing.
Wow.
So those little like jump cut things that he does. Like,
Yeah.
Destroyed the Limey. It was like a revenge picture.
Right.
That, like, he just like totally made it an art film. Okay. I love it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's him, his way of saving it, you know?
Yeah.
He'd really believe that it would make it better. So. But again, like, even he has like the failures, and he has his like 100 view movies or whatever, you know, that just like don't do very well. That get more than 100 views, but you know, to scale, it's the same. But I thought his Liberace movie was really, really cool.
Oh, I didn't see that.
It was like an HBO movie with Matt Damon.
Oh, I didn't know he directed that. I gotta watch it.
Yeah, and he like shoots all his movies and edits them and stuff. So
yeah,
he's one of those. He's the best.
All right, if you weren't a filmmaker, what would you be doing?
I don't know. I think about that a lot, and I don't have an answer for it. I don't know. I have like no hobbies. I have nothing that I like to do besides this. It's kind of a bummer. And like this past like 2 years, I when I moved to LA, everyone has hobbies. So you're just like, what's my hobby? What do I like to do? And like, I just don't like to do anything because my hobby is making a short or like shooting something like different, you know? So I think I would just make other types of stuff. And I also don't, my personality, like, I don't like to make anything else. Like, I don't like building anything. I'm just like a worthless person when I'm not doing this stuff. I don't know. Yeah, I think I would just be doing something that I didn't like, to be honest. You know, I'd just be unhappy if I wasn't a filmmaker, if I didn't find this. I guess the only thing I can think of is like a teacher.
I was going to say that.
Yeah.
But I think you'd be teaching film classes.
Yeah, I think I would. Yeah. I went to school originally to be a teacher. And then I, as a 19-year-old, I was just like, I'm too young to be a teacher. Like, you need to know stuff. So then I left that world and just like went to film school for a couple of years. And I think I'll eventually one day do that because I like have that interest, and like I like teaching people about stuff I like. But I don't know. What about you? What would you do?
Oh, I did. Jeez. I don't know. I don't know. I have no idea.
Either. Yeah.
I think I feel like this is all I do.
Yeah.
Like, I think like you, like the way you talked about your different films, that's where I'd
yeah.
Like I love making a documentary.
Yeah. Yeah. But like you're such a different.
But then yeah. I make the Gary Stays at Graveyard, which is yeah. not. It's very precise. Yeah. Like
there's like shots
acting
and yeah, like,
composed.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. So it's different.
Mm-hmm.
In your mind, it's a completely different.
It's like
art
going.
Form.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is. It's totally two different art forms. One, yeah. it's like I'm completely out of control in a documentary.
Yeah.
Not really, but like
yeah.
in a lot of ways, I'm yeah. out of control.
Yeah.
And in this other way, I'm like, I'm making right. exact choices. I want yeah. you to sit at
yeah.
this mark at this
it's
point.
It's important for this. Yeah.
yeah.
I feel like that's was how I felt when I said it earlier about these shows. It's just
yeah.
like, it's different, very different versions of the same world, I guess.
Yeah.
So I just like can't leave that world. I just don't know what I'd do.
Let me ask you this. This is maybe one of the final questions.
Cool.
Where do you think the industry or technology or whatever excites you? Some people it's like the technology, some people it's like this
yeah.
other thing. Where are we headed in this filmmaker, new media?
You know, I think it's really interesting to me now because like there's so many everythings. There's so many like very specific niche things, and like I think the only things that are making a lot of money and being successful are the ones that connect with a huge niche audience. You know, there's so many different TV channels, and then there's so many different YouTube channels now. There's so many of them. And now there's like Snapchat and stuff. That's the thing that terrifies me, is that I have no interest in Snapchat, and I think it's going to be huge.
Yeah.
And I think I'm just going to disappear because like I don't like it. But I do. What I do like is that like people are still seeing movies, and I think that's like, I think, hopefully, someone with more knowledge of the finances would probably know more, would definitely know more. But I think that like that's gonna stay there, and that's really cool, you know, because there's a lot of people who are on YouTube and stuff and like make a lot of money and they're really successful, but like. They don't know how to make a movie.
Do you care if, because you said you wanted to work in television.
Yeah.
And you want to work in films.
Mm-hmm.
Do you care about how people watch what you?
No, I don't care. No, because I watch things on everything. I think it's their own unique experience, you know? Like, there's a lot of times I don't like going to the movie theater. I think it's, like, a stressful situation sometimes. Because, like, I'm like a pretty anxious person socially, so like I don't like it when people are like rude and shit and like talking during movies, and I don't like that I can't control that, you know?
Yeah, director.
Yeah, I know. Like I if I ever became super rich, I would just have like a shitty house with like a cool movie theater inside of it, you know? Because I just want to control the experience. So I think as long as they're in control of it and like it's what is good for them, I don't really care at all, you know?
Yeah.
Like I was watching this movie, on like a laptop, and there was like the air conditioning was like blasting. I could barely hear it the other day, and it was an incredible movie. And it was like, I just watched it and loved it.
What movie?
I can't tell you.
Okay.
Like it hasn't come out yet.
Okay.
So someone I know had a secret thing to see it.
Yeah.
And it was real good. I'll tell you after this.
Okay. Great.
But yeah, it was like a bootleg kind of deal.
Nice.
And it was one of the best movies I've seen.
Really?
In years.
Oh my God, I can't wait to hear what it
yeah,
is.
Yeah, you bet.
It's
you can guess.
Aaron Brockovich 2, because I know you're a big Soderbergh fan.
Yeah, yeah, that was it.
Yeah.
It was just a script. We read the script.
Still
out loud.
Still saving. That's what.
Yeah. That's such a good movie.
Aaron Brockovich?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
And then this is the final question.
Okay.
21-year-old Paul, what advice would you give? Or maybe even better, like if there's a 21-year-old kid now.
Mm-hmm.
Because
got it.
things have changed.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, what's something that like a 21-year-old listening to this or whatever age?
I have thought about this a lot, mm-hmm. and working with Charlie has like helped me realize this a lot. And that's
Charlie Todd from Improv Everywhere.
From Improv Everywhere, yeah. And that is like stick, like it, like don't go for like the easy, like money so early. I know it's so tempting, but like I think a lot about like Landline and stuff, and like what Charlie's done with Improv Everywhere, and he's worked so hard at protecting the sanctity of that brand.
Yeah,
and I know that he has turned down a lot of really enticing opportunities because he wants to protect it. So I think, you know, what happened with Landline, like, if we just kind of stuck to our guns and, like, on the side did stuff, you know, like money stuff and didn't sort of, I don't know, not corrupt it, but just, like, change the focus of it to be about money. Because I remember being like, how fucking amazing would this be if this, like, weekly YouTube video that I make became, like, my job. And it was incredible. But I think it's more about investing in your like brand and stuff. And I think a lot of people do that now, like with YouTube. So like you look at like Charlie and he has like so many subscribers and stuff and like and fans and he does the most pure form of like what he loves to do.
Yeah.
And like he doesn't have to explain himself. He doesn't have to, you know, he just like he's really getting the like fruits of his like just like sticking to his guns and like committing to it and like making this thing grow and protecting it. So I would say that really just like protect the shit out of the thing that you love, and people will respect it and they will find it and they will love it too. And to try as hard as you can, because I know it's like money is so, it's so important when you're like trying to do what you love and you're thinking how excited you would be to do what you love and make money for it. But it's like, it's different, you know, there's two different things. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. There's like to not lose sight of.
Yeah. To not lose sight of it. And to like, just think of that long game and it could very easily pay off. Not easily. It's really hard.
Yeah.
to pay off. You know, because it took Charlie Todd from Improv Everywhere. It took him over 15 years to get here. Of like, and the first like 10, I think, were just like, it wasn't his main job.
Yeah,
you know.
And for you yourself, 7 years of from Landline to now, and I'm sure there's a lot of like different paths you took and choices you made, and other ones you could have, and you ended up in. You're ending up in the right spot.
I'm currently on the way to the right spot.
Yeah.
let's hope. Yeah, it's this funny thing where these like you're doing. I'm working on these two shows and like I'm excited about them, but like it's an exciting weird energy right now
because
no one's seen them yet.
They're gonna be great.
I hope so. Thanks, man.
Yeah.
For that advice.
Well, thanks, Paul, for stopping by.
Yeah, thank you.
And doing this podcast with me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah.
And let's find, we're going to stop and then we're going to find out what movie that was. You guys who are listening are shit out of luck.
You'll see you in a couple months, guys.
All right.
UCB Digital Podcast is brought to you by UCB Comedy. Visit the YouTube site, youtube.com/UCB Comedy for new videos every weekday from New York to Los Angeles. The best videos you'll ever see. Follow us on Twitter @UCB Comedy. On Facebook @UCB Comedy, on Tumblr @UCB Comedy, on Instagram @UCB Comedy.